Hello, everyone. You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, Richard Lannan, but you knew that already, didn't you? You heard it just before with the opening. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life, and we're going to do this through what? Chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, to help you create the success that you deserve, and you do deserve to be successful. You know what? I want you to say that right now. I deserve to be successful. You do. And that's what I wish for you. You know, I love quotes. I'm always on the internet checking out different quotes and things like this. So we always like to do the Set for Success quote. So here's today's Set for Success quote. I have endured pain and loss. I have felt broken. I have felt and have known hardship. I have felt lost and alone. But here I stand trying to move forward one day at a time. I will remember the lessons in my life because they are making me who I am, stronger, a warrior. Now, I do not know who that quote is from. I looked it up, I found it on the internet, and then I started to look for references. But I did find a website called healthyplace.com. It's an interesting site with all sorts of quotes on it, I guess for sort of troublesome times, with all sorts of topic areas. Now, I'm not saying that a positive quote will solve your problems, but I do think that positive quotes remind you that your pain has a purpose and that you can create positivity in your life currently filled with pain. Sometimes you find yourself, you'll find the inner strength to rise above and to take action to help you with your pain. For business leaders, professionals, family members, heck, everyday people, just like you and me, there are many forms of pain in life. Heck, I just stayed at a website that quotes everyday pain or everyday things to look at, and they deal with everything from addiction to diabetes to anxiety to depression. All everyday conditions that are part of a population, our population, and therefore people's lives. Mental illness is one of those ones that concerns me. I don't know about you, but I grew up in a household where you never said anything about anything, and you never told anybody about anything, and whatever went on just sort of went on. And I guess, in certain respects, mental illness was a bad word. Now, what does that do for a bunch of people? I think that makes people somewhat dysfunctional and unable to deal with certain things, maybe to help others heal, grow, and move on to create a better life for themselves. From a Set for Success perspective, you know what? I'm going to say it. Stop wasting time and being in denial. Step up and have the conversation about mental illness. I know it's not easy, but really, we should not hide from talking about the issues that plague our lives. Through conversation and support, there's a lot we can do to help ourselves and others deal with the pain in their lives, become stronger, and be a warrior. So here's what we're going to do today. As I gave the show some thought, I wondered who in their life or who could, from a business perspective or personal life, come share their journey with us. Somebody I know or knows something about mental illness is dedicated to sharing the life journey with others. As luck would have it, John Milnick was available to come and chat with us today. He's an awesome guy who is on a mission of helping people rise above depression and live a full life. John, welcome to the show today.
Nice to be here, Richard.
Given the topic we're going to talk about, I'm actually excited to have you here because
Thank
I think
you.
It's such an important topic. But I always like to start in the space of a little bit about your background. Okay,
sure.
John, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a Winnipegger. I've been here all my life except for 5 years. I lived in Saskatchewan where I met my wife, so that was good. But I graduated from the University of Manitoba in 1975.
Oh, you've been around for a while.
I have. I spent 30 years in the financial planning business where I worked with a lot of very good people and got to know a lot about people's dreams and hopes because they're all tied into their finances.
Sure.
And I just enjoy life. I'm a huge Jet fan, a Bomber fan, a Goldeye fan, all things Winnipeg. I'm there.
You're a pro.
I am there. I am, yes. I am a Toastmaster. I've been involved in Toastmasters for 25 years, and I'm a Rotarian, also about 25 years.
Well, it's out of curiosity, what is a Rotarian?
A Rotarian? Rotary is an international organization set up in distinct clubs. In Winnipeg, there are 8 Rotary clubs. The whole purpose of Rotary is to raise funds and help and give back to the society that sustains you. Okay. That's basically what, it's over 100 years old, and it's doing something right because it's still steaming along.
Still around. Sorry, yeah. Continue your story. I just wanted to ask that question because I often hear people say the rotary, so I just thought I would ask.
Yeah, that's what rotary is. So I enjoy going to movies. I enjoy going to baseball games. I live with my fine wife, Jan, and our little Sheltie dog, Bling, who is just a delight. I spent 6 weeks in a mental health ward in 2002, and I enjoy many, many other things. And you might notice that I said I spent 6 weeks in a mental health ward because I don't want that to define me. I'm not afraid of it, and I just consider it to be a factor, a huge factor in my life, because it was after that that I decided I should be speaking up about mental illness.
About mental illness.
Yes.
I know we're going to be talking a bit about mental illness and that, mm-hmm. and maybe what we could do initially is just maybe define the term mental illness.
Good question.
Because I think you have some ideas of how it should be defined.
I do, yes. I would say that a mental illness is a mood disorder, and it's a mood disorder that prohibits you or blocks you from living the kind of life you want to. There are hundreds upon thousands of people that have a diagnosis of a mental illness, bipolar disorder, depression, what have you, but they're living very productive lives.
Yeah, dysthymia was one that you and I talked about one time too. And
that's
a light, mild, ongoing depression that most people don't even realize they have. You know. So anyway, start going on, continue.
Absolutely. So I would say the illness part of it becomes, it becomes when it inhibits you from doing the things you want to do. And one of the examples that I use, one of the greatest examples that I use is we've all heard of Ted Turner, created yes. CNN, owned the Atlanta Braves, a world-class sailor, a great humanitarian. He has bipolar disorder. I don't determine that, in his case, to be an illness other than it's diagnosed, but it hasn't stopped him from living an amazing life. If it had, if his bipolar disorder had stopped him from moving ahead and doing the things that he wants to do, then I would call it an illness and of course, a very sad situation. So I'd say a mental illness is really something that prohibits you from doing what you really want to do.
Okay. I mean, I think that's a really good definition. I mean, listen to you and everything mm-hmm. as you start to speak it, because I do wonder if sometimes people, when you're diagnosed with a mental illness, that almost like puts the brakes on, so to speak.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue our journey talking about mental illness with John Melnick and his story to recovery. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with John Melnick today. We were just talking about mental illness. You know what? I'm guessing that you know somebody with mental illness. Maybe it's a sister, a brother, a mother, a father, a son, a daughter, a cousin, somebody at work, somebody just sitting right next to you right now. Maybe you don't know. In other words, they've never told you. So I think that's sort of a good place to sort of start. When John started, we started the show and John was talking, we talked about being in the financial industry and then spending 6 weeks in an institution. So I think we're going to just back up a little bit and we're going to just, John, you and I talked about this during the break, is let's just back up a little bit. You're working in the financial industry. You've been successful in the financial industry from what I can gather. And I'm curious as to what point in time or course of time did you start to realize you had a mental illness? And then what's the story related to that?
Yeah, I'm sure. Spring of 2002.
So you actually have a time period?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What happened was I was sailing along in the business. I was enjoying what I was doing. In the spring of 2002, I started feeling down. And I couldn't come out of it. It was something that was lasting for more than 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah, period of time.
Which pretty well says you do have some kind of a mental illness if you're feeling that way for 2 weeks or longer. I went to my doctor, my general practitioner. I'm very fortunate in that he understands depression. And he said to me, "You have depression, and you've had this before." And I said, "I might have it now, but I've never had this before." He said, you have depression and you've had it before. I said, how do you know that? He says, very rare for a person, male or female, of your age. I was turning 50 that year. Very rare for you to have this, and it's the first one. I started thinking back, and when I was about 25, sure enough, I now know I went through an undiagnosed depression.
And at that point in time in our lives, I think we can both speak to this, we're of enough generation that people probably wouldn't say anything, right?
No, they didn't. They didn't. And I was working at a major financial institution here in Winnipeg. I'd been working there for a couple of years. Things were going on well. And then I stopped caring. And my production dropped almost off the table. And I do recall a supervisor saying to me, you know, what's your problem? What's wrong? And I don't know. I ended up taking a three-month leave of absence and traveled around Europe with a buddy who was going to Europe. And I didn't know it, but at the time, I was self-treating an undiagnosed depression. I came back and I got back into my career and sailed along for, like I say, about 30 years. Then in the spring of 2002, like I say, my doctor said, you've had this before. He started treating me. He referred me to a psychiatrist. We were trying all kinds of different combinations of medication, etc. Nothing seemed to work. September 19th of 2002, I swam into the middle of the Red River dressed in a business suit, wanting to end the pain that depression had visited upon me, and not thinking I could come out of it because I had treatment, medication, etc. So that was when, September 19th, when I swam out of the river, decided that I wanted to try a different route in the middle of the river. Good thing I could swim.
Yeah, good thing you could.
And I went home. My wife saw me standing there with all this mud and water dripping in the driveway. And she said, what happened? I said, I swam into the river. She said, we're going to the hospital. She knew that I was being treated for depression, and she's been right beside me all the way on this. The 6 weeks I spent in that hospital were worth gold because it started to uncover in that work with the psychologist on the ward especially. I started to uncover a whole bunch of things that were, you know, deep embedded in me that were causing me problems. But also, I did hit the right combination of medications. The psychiatrist tried many different things, and that's a whole nother question itself. What medication should you use? The ones that work. And you have to keep trying until you, and we hit a combination that has been working since then. I learned a lot. My doctor told me again, he said, you learn as much as you can about this depression and how it affects you. Because it's going to come back, but you can be prepared for it. You can be ready for it, and you can fend it off.
That's amazing that you had such a proactive or forward-thinking doctor, because I'm not always convinced that all doctors are like that.
No, and I take my hat off to doctors who do understand depression, and this is no slight against our friends in the medical profession.
Not a slight.
Who can keep up with everything?
Yeah.
But our doctor, my doctor, does understand depression, and thank goodness for that. So his advice was good. It was solid advice. I started learning as much as I could about depression. And one of the things that I uncovered is, if I had known when I was 25 what I was dealing with, I probably never would have gotten into what I got into when I turned 50. Because I'd be watching for it. If I'd known when I was 25, this is depression. And the other thing is, one of the questions my doctor asked me, do you have depression in your family tree? I had never thought of it in that light. And I said, come to think of it, on both sides. He said, well, it's not a guarantee, but you are predisposed to depression. And the more I learned about this, the more I thought other people should know these things because these are warning signs. And they can prepare, they can be ready for depression and fend it off. And it's like anything else. We hear so many things these days about diet and how you can use the right diet to make yourself a lot more healthy. Same thing when it comes to mental health. You can do the right things. You can put a plan together to keep yourself safe from depression or to block it.
That's a really great point. I think what we'll do, John, when we come back, we'll talk about those things. We'll continue on the line of what are the things that you can do to prepare yourself or to effectively manage your depression. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with John Melnick today, and we're talking about mental illness. We're talking about the importance of actually diagnosing mental illness and identifying it in your life. I think a couple of things that John said in the last segment that were just really important was, you know, coming to recognize your mental illness, looking at what the impacts are, and then also looking at your family tree. I think, John, you mentioned about, you know, chances are you're predisposed to mental illness.
Yes.
So if it is in your family tree, then, you know, it might actually explain a few things that you are experiencing. I also have all sorts of questions about this, John. I mean, previously, I did want to talk about what you can do about it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I wrote down on my notes as you were talking the last segment was, you know, did you find that your mental illness or with depression, was it more of a, I'm going to say, physiological thing with you, or was it more like a I'm going to say psychological, where we're talking about life experiences and things that happened in your life that led to your depression?
Combination.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a combination. And one of the major factors was I was affected hugely by an addiction.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying I had the addiction. I was in business with a person who we were in business together for 12 years. And in the last 5 years, I now know, I didn't know at the time, but I now know that he was slowly and then very strongly becoming addicted to gambling.
Okay.
And when you're involved with someone who has an addiction, there's one main thing you have to learn. And a good friend of mine who does a lot of work with people with addictions taught me this. You have to learn three things about people with addictions. They lie, they lie, they lie. Mm. And once you understand that, you're much more prepared to deal with them. So the fellow that I was in business with, like I say, he was addicted to gambling. He was driving himself into deep debt, and it was hugely affecting our business and our business relationship. So that was one of the main, I'd say, trigger points. And one of the things, by the way, that I have learned and I counsel people to do, take a look at your relationships at least every 3 to 5 years and make sure that they're still doing what you thought they would be doing, and what if they're serving the right purpose. And there are basically three types that I look at. One is those that are working well. Well, if they're working well, keep feeding them, keep doing whatever it is that makes them work. There's the kind that aren't working well anymore, but you think they can be fixed. And the key there is to sit down and talk with the person and say, hey, something's off the rails here. Can we put it back on the rails? And the third one is the kind, and you have to be honest with yourself, that aren't working and aren't going to work. And you know deep inside what, you know.
Yeah.
And I suggest to people, move those people out of your life. Now, a lot of people, that kind of scares them. They say, well, I don't quite know how to do that. And I say, well, leave this voicemail on your, or this message on your answering service. Thanks for calling. I'm making a few changes. Leave me your name and phone number. And if I don't call you back, you are one of the changes. That kind of gives people a little bit of a laugh and an insight. But
yeah. But
I really do believe that the vast majority of mental health issues and problems are created or enhanced by having the wrong people in our lives.
Yeah.
That's a huge issue.
My dad used to say, choose your friends wisely because they can make you or break you, right? And I've taught that to my kids. And I think that's so true. And even my wife, I'm sorry, I got to sort of share my own life here a little bit.
Sure.
My wife used to say to me, she couldn't understand that as we've been together for 32 years now, and she couldn't understand how I could leave some relationships behind.
Yeah.
And I think it was just because I learned a lesson somewhere along the way that, you know what, if this is not working, like, don't be in that relationship, right?
And, absolutely.
And I think that's what I hear you say.
Absolutely.
Right? And I don't think either one of us are saying that that's easy.
No, it's not.
No, you know, because...
But you have to be aware of it, and you can create a strategy to reduce exposure to a person or ultimately terminate. It's not easy, but when you think about it, it's your own health and the health of the people around you, because when you become like mentally stressed, et cetera, it affects your friends and family and people you love.
Yeah, and you don't realize what the impact is.
Not at all.
Over time. That sort of poses a very interesting question, and no doubt we can talk about in this segment and next segment. You know, what can you do about mental illness or improving your health? I
mean, yes.
I suspect there's probably, you come across one of those guys that you go, you know, I got these 3 points you can do or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you could share some things that you
absolutely
can do.
Absolutely. The first one is education.
Yeah.
Educate yourself. And again, I draw a parallel. We have come so far in our society about educating ourselves when it comes to physical health.
Sure.
You see all over the city places to go to work out. You see all kinds of information about quality food and that type of thing. Do the same thing when it comes to mental health. Read articles. There's new things coming out all the time. Research your family tree if there's problems there. And it's not the people, by the way. It's the illness that affected the people. Mm. There can be wonderful people in your background, your family tree, but be aware that if they have acted irrationally, etc., chances are there's something there that may be part of your makeup. So I would say study that, educate yourself a lot. One of the other things that you can do is attend conferences on mental health. Or if you're an employer, bring people in to speak about mental health. I was fortunate to do a presentation a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things I listed for the employees of the company I was speaking with, what are the signs of a mental illness? And they are, if you are losing sleep, if you are irritable, if you're crying, if you're upset, if you're losing weight or gaining weight, and all these things are, if it's for a 2-week period or longer, that's kind of the key. And just knowing that, if you do see something that's happening along that line, go to your doctor. And that's the next thing is to speak, talk to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And would you, like you say, go to your doctor or talk to people. And so I guess we're still talking about educating ourselves and that. Are there other, like your doctors, are there people you should be talking to?
Or, absolutely.
Or maybe we can sort of give a bit of a checklist on that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are a plethora of organizations. The Canadian Mental Health Association.
Okay.
The Mood Disorders Association of Manitoba. Go on their websites and take a look. The Canadian Mental Health Association, by the way, has what they call a hub line where you can phone, you can identify things that are bothering you or problems you're having. They will get back to you, usually within 48 hours, and suggest places that you can go to. And that's worth gold.
That is really worth gold. Because that sounds like something you can almost do anonymously.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And because some people will probably, I can't imagine that some people would be embarrassed to say or
certainly
think that, you know, I might have a mental health illness, but yeah, I don't really want to say it.
That's right.
They're not ready.
That's right.
Right? Because
that's
I think
right.
It's a partly.
Yeah. And this is all confidential.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all confidential. And the nice thing about the Canadian Mental Health Association, their hub line, they will refer you to other organizations. This is not an in-house proprietary thing. They know where the help is for certain issues, a number of the issues, and they will refer you.
I think what we'll do, John, is we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about the things that you can do in order to conquer your mental illness.
Sure.
This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. You're hanging out with Richard Lannan and John Melnick. And John's been really gracious about coming and sharing his story on mental illness and his challenges in life. Just before end of the last show, I mentioned that, you know, it sounds to me like you can conquer your mental illness. And during the break, John, you started to share a little story with me on that. What was that story again?
Well, as I emerged after 2002, started researching and learning more and more about mental illness, one of the things I did is I sent an email to all my cousins and I said, watch out, it's in our family tree, be very careful. And I shared things from time to time with them. And a couple of years later, a wonderful, insightful, I believe, a cousin of mine sent me an email and said, John, you now own what used to own you. And I thought that was pretty good way of phrasing it, because I have depression. I deal with it every day, but it doesn't stop me. It doesn't define me. It doesn't stop me.
Yeah, it doesn't stop you from your life. And I know, and I know some of the other stuff you were doing, right? Yeah. I would have to agree with that statement. Yeah. I don't think it defined you or doesn't stop you from doing the things you want to do. I can't, you know, it sounds to me like you're a man with a plan, and there must be an approach to actually sort of planning how to, maybe we can talk a little bit more about, you know, what you can do. So is there something that you need to plan for?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I was in the mental health ward in 2002, one of the psychiatric nurses gave me a wonderful piece of advice. She said, you need to have a plan, and you can work this and you can control the depression, but you need to have a plan. So my plan is, number one, I am very cautious about the people that I let into my life and keep in my life. That's extremely important. The second thing is I journal. And journaling is amazing. And by that, I mean you just write a few lines on a daily basis, or sometimes every second day or third day. But you write about things that you've been doing and how much you have enjoyed or not enjoyed them. And you document problems that you're having and solutions that you come up with, etc. But the real power is looking back at a journal over the past couple of years. And often you find things, for instance, many people would probably find that in January they're not at their highest. Like the Christmas season is over, the festival seasons are over.
It's the Christmas blues.
And you can actually plan to protect against a downturn by creating something that you're going to do or planning something you're going to do at the end of January or early February. And it doesn't have to be to fly away to Hawaii. It can be as simple as going and staying downtown in a hotel for a weekend. And just enjoying going to a show or whatever. It doesn't have, but it has to be something you look forward to. There's all kinds of things like that, going to a spa, etc. And it can become an annual event. And that can be an antidote to depression or feeling down. The third part of my plan is, and when I coach people, and I do a lot of coaching of people, I ask them to, and I've done it myself, it sounds kind of funny, write your own obituary. And look at
I'm sorry, I shouldn't even laugh at that.
I know, but no, that's okay.
That's dark.
But you know, it is, but what you're doing is you're outlining the things that you want to have said when you're gone. What did this person do? What did they accomplish? What defined them, etc.? And then, are you working towards that? In other words, there's lots of us that say, I'd like it to be said that I was a great family person, spent a lot of time with the family. Okay, great. Look at what you're doing today. Are you spending a lot of time with the family or not?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where we all have goals in our minds, but to put them down on paper and then be working towards them, that's the key, is the action on
it.
It's
the action. You know, it's interesting you would say that, because I have the opportunity, and I'm very blessed and very fortunate to do this, to interview a lot of people. And rarely does anybody say, you know, I wish I had more money, I wish I had a better car, you know. They get to a point in their lives where it's especially if they've had a life, what I call a life event, a significant life event, where they have the realization that, that just doesn't matter, right? And I get, and it's a common theme. Like, I could literally take every interview I've done,
yes,
and I can find a common theme in that. And then they do talk about the things that, you know, you're talking about,
yes,
right? Where they have a it's family, or it's that vacation event, but with their best friends,
right,
or whatever, right? It's never, oh, gee, my house is so big that I can get lost in it. You know, rarely. You know,
rarely that's
kind of thing. Yeah. So that is the whole idea of having a plan, right? Looking at your people in your life, making sure they're positive influences, journaling, which is a really positive one, doing stuff or having things planned that you can do during those downtimes, so you're not just sitting at home. And then I guess was working with the last one was sort of working with I didn't quite get it written down, just making sure that you got things moving forward. One of the themes or common themes I see in here is this whole sense of I'm going to call it monitoring. Okay, and I think that's the word that that you threw out at me at one point in time. It sounds to me, through what we've been discussing, about you're literally monitoring your mental illness. You're and through that monitoring, you're accepting it, right? In order to monitor something, you got to recognize that it's real.
You sure do.
That in itself is probably a hurdle. But but is that sort of what you're doing? Are you like monitoring things
all the time? All the time.
Yeah, and in what way, like, and maybe you can give some ideas around the monitoring process and everything.
Certainly.
Why it's so important.
Well, one of my main goals and something that gives me a tremendous amount of satisfaction is doing things like this.
Okay.
Communicating to people and helping them grow in their knowledge of mental health. So what I do is I look at, and again, I do a lot of speaking in front of groups. And I will have goals that I want to speak in front of a certain number of groups within a certain period of time. So I think, okay, how's that going to happen? Well, I have to let people know that I'm available. So I have a marketing campaign where I let people know that I'm available. And everything flows from that. I sit down and I say, what has to happen in order for me to accomplish that goal of speaking to many people? I am a member of Toastmasters, and I know you are too, Richard. We're in one of the clubs together. That's always helping to sharpen my communication skills. Again, something that you, and when you have stronger communication skills, you feel more confident in being able to speak. And the third thing is, I do a lot of work with organizations like the CMHA, etc., helping them move ahead in what they're wanting to do, and you feel you're part of a bigger thing. Feeling you're part of something bigger than yourself is wonderful. It's wonderful.
That makes a lot of sense. John, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, my email address is John Melnick, M-E-L-N-I-C-K, at shaw.ca. I have a website, which is www.johnmelnick.ca.
Awesome. Those are great, great places to connect with you. What a show we've been having, John. I mean, you're just an awesome guest. You know, I got to sort of find our close here, but I'm just wondering, maybe in 10 or 15 seconds, if you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
Mental illness is not an illness unless you let it become an illness and define you. It can be handled, it can be controlled, and there's a plethora of resources available. So keep educating yourself and have hope.
Have hope. Great, great, great final thought. John, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and wanting to come on the Set for Success today. As for our listeners, of course, I want to thank you for tuning in. And if you have a question or thought or an idea around the show, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something: to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.